Okay, so I'm Rick Hansen. It's November 29th, 2017. And I've been reflecting lately on two related topics. The first of them is the optional sixth and sort of forgotten often criterion for wise speech in Buddhism. The idea of speech that is beneficial. What characterizes speech that is wise? And classically, the criteria, which are a little bit of a checklist, as long as everything's going fine, we can kind of freestyle it with people, but things start getting a little tense or awkward, or there's a strange disconnect or glitch, it's often helpful to just kind of run a little mental checklist, a little bit like a pre-flight checklist. So the Buddha's, as it were, pre-flight checklist before launching into a conversation is to seek to communicate in ways that are well-intended, first, second, actually beneficial, third, true, and there's no particular priority order here, third, true, fourth, not harsh, that's interesting, in other words, clean in the tone, fifth, timely, a reasonable and useful occasion, and then the sixth sort of optional condition, but desirable one, is communication or speech that is wanted. So it's interesting to reflect upon speech that is unwanted, or communication or behavior in general that is unwanted compared to wanted, particularly in light of the recent intensity of focus, long overdue, I think, on unwanted sexualized harassment, assault, misbehavior of various kinds. That's really moved front and center, in many quarters at least, in the national conversation. And so think about that, and for me as a man with a lot of privilege, it's quite haunting to reflect on the whole topic of unwanted speech or communication or behavior, including in light of the Buddha's teachings about all that. So I wanted to, if I could, make a few comments about some things that observations I have about wanted and unwanted communicating, and then really kind of open it up. And I think it's useful to look here both ways. On the one hand, what's been unwanted that's come at you, particularly in terms of communication of one kind or another? And the other side of it is reflecting on ways in which you, or including I, communicate, speak, act toward others in ways that are unwanted. Now, the Buddha identified this criterion, characteristic of wise speech, wholesome speech, as sort of optional in the sense that sometimes it's just true, that they may not want to hear it, but you know, the greater good is calling for us to say it, or minimally our own good is calling us to say it. And we do what we can, but there is that moment where, like it or not, I'm going to give you a piece of my mind, or something like that. There's a place for that. And again, think about speech in a political context. Demonstration, civil disobedience, protest. The powers that be may not want it, and yet the communication is really, really important to make. So that's the larger context. So with regard to speech that is unwanted, I wanted to offer a few reflections and then really open it up here. The first reflection is a distinction that I learned in diversity training between intent and impact. The intent may be benign, positive, or neutral, but the impact could be negative, needlessly negative. And a little story about that, about myself, I was in a meditation teacher training some years ago, and one of the people in the training is African-American, and we were arriving at Spirit Rock for one of the five retreats we did over the 2.5 years of the training. I think it was around the third retreat. And we were just kind of arriving there and walking past a lot of nice gardening. And myself, the woman, African-American, and a third person, a woman who's Caucasian, we were walking up the hill, commenting on the landscaping, and then I used an expression that I'd heard before, kind of a joke, as it were, on the notion of a green thumb, and they were saying how much they liked to garden. I said, yeah, I love the results, but I have a black thumb. And as soon as the word was 80% of the way out of my mouth, I was like, but too late. And I thought, a little bit later, I get back to the dormitory, and the white woman said, "Rick, wow." And I went, "Oh, yeah, I know, what?" And so I went to my friend, first name Pamela, African-American woman, and said, "Wow, I'm so sorry about that." And she said, "Well, first, I know where your heart is, Rick. It's okay." And also, she said, "If I spoke up every single one of those every day, you know, it'll be like even worse. But, you know, there you have it, right there." She said to me, "Black is bad. Intent, impact." Boom. Just really reflecting on that. So that's the first offering about wanted, unwanted. Second is to really be attentive to the dimension of power. Because almost by definition, unwanted speech involves a kind of power move, or some perhaps even unintentional, but factually dominance move. And I think about the wonderful book about different styles of communicating you just don't understand from Deborah Tannen, that she points out that all communications have three aspects. There's the overt content, the emotional tone, which could be neutral, like a phone number has a neutral emotional tone. And then implicitly embedded in it is a statement about the nature of the relationship, including often the status or power differentials or hierarchies that are communicated. And of those, the emotional tone and the communication about the nature of the relationship, who gets to give who instructions, who gets to give whom advice, who gets to criticize, who has to be criticized, who's the knower, who's the learner. You see all those implicit communications. And even though we often give them the least attention, they have the most impact. For example, interrupting. Research shows that, generally speaking, as a generalization, many exceptions, men tend to interrupt women much more than women tend to interrupt men. There's power in that. There's domination. Up, enough with what you think. I'm going to say what I think. It's a power move. Being attentive to the communication of power. And I think in my own personal view, there is the occasion for the assertion of power. You have to exercise power in some ways, authority in some ways, as a parent with children who are minors to protect them sufficiently. Okay, there's a place for that sometimes. But I think it's really useful, particularly related to unwantedness, to really pay attention to the aspect of power. Very often the purpose, I think, of the communication is the assertion of power. That's the covert but actual primary purpose, the assertion of power. I get to do that to you. If we were to reverse it, it would be unthinkable for you to do that to me or to the class of people that I belong to. Power. Third notion or reflection on wantedness or not, as a suggestion, is to ask permission. Just to kind of set the table, knock before entering. I think how often people sort of barge into our attentional field and think they have the right to our attention. And it's kind of shocking sometimes to sort of say to people, "Whoops, wait a second here. I haven't given you permission to enter my awareness," in a sense. Not to be a jerk about it, but to sort of say, if you think of it, what's in our field of awareness is the front end of who we become. Classically, what we rest our mind upon becomes who we are. Modern update, neuroplasticity, what we pay attention to, what we rest our attention on, is the first step of hardwiring that experience into our body. So having some kind of autonomy over attention and what we are paying attention to is fundamental, really, to privacy, to personhood, and it goes both ways. If we want to exercise that kind of boundary, assertion of a little bit of a fence that may have a gate in it, but there's a gate there, and you know you should knock before you come barging in, flip it around, that's true for other people. Things changed for me a lot when I started actually trying to get buy-in or permission or consent before I launched into my infinite wisdom with people. I kind of have your consent, in effect, implicitly, if you think about it. But just getting consent, getting permission, asking permission, relates again to power, making requests rather than demands, even implicit demands. Obviously, in intimate, important, significant relationships, there are tacit understandings in which consent has sort of been given in advance, but just paying attention to that aspect, and including as we go further along. Do I still have your consent 4 minutes into this conversation in which I'm telling you how to be a better person? Right? Okay. Fourth, just offering or thought here. I knew I had a fourth that's going to come to me. I know it. Oh, it's about being relevant to what they care about. And I have a little story about that as well. So my very first book, 2002, Mother Nurture. I'd never written a book before. It was a big deal. I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a lot invested in it. And I finally, some struggle. The hardest chapter is the first chapter. Actually, usually the hardest part to write is the introduction. Often you write the introduction last after you figure out what the book is. But in any case, I struggled mightily to write my first chapter. And I was in Joshua Tree National Monument with my two good friends, Bob and Rick, another Rick. Both physicians, both very high-level academics, and I got their permission to have them read my draft chapter. And so I sat there in the motel pool, or on the edge of it in the back of the motel, while we all just sat there, and they read the chapters, and they paused. And here's the thing. My friend Rick, he's a physician. He's very interested in medical literature, narrative, postmodern analysis, and all that high-end stuff. And he said, well, to me, Rick, I really think this idea of motherhood altogether is a very essentialist construct. And really, I think it just binds you immediately when you're communicating in that way. The book was about nurturing mothers, how to protect mothers, how to take good care of them and over the long haul in terms of their body, their mind, and their personal relationships. It's for a general audience, a self-help book for a mass market, and my friend Rick Martinez is giving me this very high-level academic advice. My other friend, Bob, very successful, a professor, full professor at Harvard, very successful guy, bursts out. We're all very good friends. Cuts off my other friend, Rick, did not get his consent, and said his last, I won't say his last name for the tape, but he said his last name as we might. He goes, "Brr, you know, that's ridiculous." You have to understand, either a piece of work is, in effect, dead on arrival, or you're working within the frame of what it is. And so any kind of useful feedback or input is in the frame of what the undertaking is, what it's about. Rick Hansen is not trying to write some exotic postmodernist literary analysis of the construct of motherhood for the something or other review of books. He's actually trying to help real mothers and real fathers and real families in the day-to-day issues that they're grappling with in lots of practical ways, which is perfectly clear in the first chapter. So if you're going to give feedback, make sure it's useful to what the person's frame or focus is. And I just think that's so good. You know, what's the relevance or the utility, usefulness inside the context of what the other person wants, what they care about, what their priorities are? Given their mission here, as it were, how can we help? How can we be useful to that mission? Okay. And then the last just offering briefly here is the flip of this consideration about avoiding speech that's unwanted unless it's really appropriate and necessary, is to offer speech that is wanted. What do you want? What does the other person want? To me, that's actually such an endearing question. It's almost a taboo. What do you want? Because it can have a tone in it that's very nasty. But I mean it really in an endearing way. We want. We're born to want. There's no end to wanting. Wanting to not want is another want. It's very intimate and tender what we want. And to ask the other person, what do you want from me? I remember one of the most intense and profound conversations I ever stumbled into was with a good friend of mine many 30 plus years ago, where we just started asking each other the same question over and over again. And then we debriefed it later, and there were two questions. The first was, what do you want from me? Answer, okay, got it. What else do you want from me? Okay, got it. What do you want from me? You know? And then the second question is, what do you need for me to trust me? Over and over again. What do you need for me to trust me? Okay, got it. What else do you need for me to trust me? And I offered those two questions just as a concrete illustration of the larger point about really taking on board and reflecting upon what the other does want or might want, including potentially inquiring into that area. I think, frankly, that that question is the last question that would arise in the mind of the people who've really invaded the space and crossed the boundaries and on the spectrum from harassment to assault and beyond. You know, just the thought of, what do you want from me? If that question had been asked and sincerely answered, if there was room in the power relationships to even address it in a straightforward way, you know, the conduct would just not have, in effect, occurred. You know, like, the hand would have been in the face, if not more. So, okay, those are my offerings, my usual checklist way. I wanted to move through them fairly quickly. They're going to have a big holiday party here at 8:30, so I'm just going to try to end pretty close to 8:30 before the madness really begins. So what do you make of all that? The larger topic, in any which way you want to take it? A barn burner? I don't know. But yeah, please.
I'm just going to share a situation. It's a sequence of situations that happened, and it's ongoing. And so, I'm going to bounce it back and forth. It's at work, hospital, whole new administration, very financially oriented, no soft fuzzy anymore, no, you know, roles are changing. And blah, blah. I was blasted with a do this on a Saturday morning. I made a move that I thought would be helpful by reaching out to the charge nurses, handing out a piece of paper for them to explain, I've gotten this, now we'll go to there. Well, the next Monday meeting, two of the managers absolutely blasted me before I could even, in a meeting, in front of everyone, you did this and you took it on yourself to change a process and you did this. And then another one joined in with, you know, you've always had barriers and you, and I was so blown away, but I stayed aware. And I just said, I'll share. I created a tool as a goal for clarity. And I just kept repeating myself, and then I protected myself a little bit with, I don't have barriers. There aren't barriers. That's not part of this. I approached the person who was a male, being especially abusive, and we had a little bit of conversation. A couple days go by, I get called into the new director of nurse's office with HR present, and there, we heard from a charge nurse in a meeting that you, blah, blah, blah.
To that guy.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And it was pretty cute. I almost laughed out loud, which would have been inappropriate, that you said there needed to be an investigation. And I almost laughed because I said, well, I've been taking this class that's been encouraging us to investigate what's going on.
Here, right, yeah.
And I said, not to have an investigation onto legally, but to investigate it. And the piece that I got across the table was, oh, well, it went on and on. I got a little bit of a softened body language. I got a little bit, I just, there's not really any place I need to go with it.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting, and I'm sure probably everyone can relate, where we're starting to use some of what we're learning here. Mm-hmm. In the moment, and you can kind of catch yourself going, whoa, this is the big one. This is the tough one. This is the adrenaline's going. The protection's going, I'm not feeling safe, it's very difficult to resource, and then you get this little, wait, I can have a different thought here.
Inside your own mind.
Inside my own mind.
Well, thank you for saying all that, and Obviously, it's not a problem seeking a solution. There's just a reflection or two. One is, what do we do when unwanted communications come at us, including implicit body language, behavior, framing, tone, piling on, like three against one, hello,
right?
Who's standing, who's seated?
Who's male,
who's female? And also, what are the connotations that the whole event is fraught with? Right, the subtext. So, so I just want to name the topic of, wow, how do we respond to that? And to be clear, so I try to understand that my own perspective is limited. So I'm a guy and all the rest of that. But what strikes me often is that it seems, for one, people have to take into account real consequences in challenging authority. Time and place, stuff like that. I don't have advice about that. I think it's obviously important to take that into account. But one thing I've seen a lot is that when a person breaks the script of expectation related to an unwanted communication, it often has a lot of power. And that's what I, in some ways, hear you doing there quite carefully. And again, in the medical system, the authority structure, whether it's gendered or not, is doctors are the uber-duber bosses, right? And you're, I'm going to use the word deliberately here, just so-called a nurse, so write that. But just breaking that script where, in your body language, you're not deferential. You may not need to say a word, but you're breaking the script. There's a scripted quality. Or pausing. Pausing is very powerful. Or you just think about the dignity of people historically who've been in a subordinated position in their societies, and their things are coming at them. If they overtly fight back, frankly, that would be, could literally become a very violent consequence for them, potentially lethal, and yet they maintain their centered quiet, and they just kind of look. And that look with dignity breaks the script. So that's a thought about the scriptedness sometimes of repetitive unwanted communication and how to break that script. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Other people, notions about this? First year than you? Okay, my line of sight moving that way. Yeah.
So just thinking of other things that we're learning in here, as you were speaking, it reminded me of, I think, another topic that you spoke of, which is how we sometimes it people and sort of kind of really understand their whole personness. And I've noticed that I have been able to bring that into consciousness so that I can, at times when I'm thinking, oh God, what is this person doing? I can kind of stop myself and say, wait a minute, they're just this whole big person with all these details and history and context. And I've been lucky enough to travel across the world recently and just trying that on in a different context where I really don't know anything about where they're coming from. I just know that I don't know. And what it does, how it changes a situation where I just relax and think, you are such a complex human being, and it's just kind of transforms it into just feeling like it's an honor to be with this other complex human being. And to stop making assumptions and just noticing how much I relax in that moment and how much I can let go of my defensiveness and whatever agenda I bring in, and just how nice it is, how much it changes a situation for me and for, I think, everybody involved, just to stop itting people and stop imagining that my agenda matters more than anyone else's or even that I need to have an agenda. So
Great.
Just notice bringing that into these kinds of situations.
Yeah, thank you. Great. All right, yeah, please.
I want to say, if someone was reacted really bizarrely, like overreacting over something really tiny or attacking you or something, a lot of times I just automatically feel bad for that person because I feel like what kind of life he or she lived behind the scene that created that kind of highly agitated mind. You know, maybe, you know, she was or he was stressed out way before even facing this issue, you know. I'm from New York City, before I moved to Marin. I remember there was one time, you know, in the subway that people were always rushing, hurry, and some someone pushed a African-American lady in front of me, and all of a sudden she turned around and started to yell, and she, of course she did not know who was pushing her, and she was, I mean, right in front of me, even though she was not looking at me, I would just automatically reacted like, you don't have to react it that way, you know? And then suddenly she just, I guess my reaction surprised her, instead of yelling back at her, and so she just calmed down, and then the person actually pushed her, turned around and thanked me for responding that way to her. Now I really want to talk about what I want to say. I mean, I was just inspired by what she said.
Well, I do want to just flag though. I mean, again, think of the history, being African American. Think about many possible nuances there, and somebody who finally says, hey, I've had it. So I don't know. I just want to name that possibility. Okay, keep going.
And also you mentioned about giving advice in the context of the person, right? And I want to say, when you first said that instead of green thumb, you black thumb, my instinct reaction was I want to laugh because it was so funny. But then in this country, you have all kinds of colors here. And so, you know, something funny to one or two people may be offended some other. This is something that in my native country, China, I had never experienced before, right? We all was the same color. So I want to say that because of these cultural differences, and I also traveled in other countries, and I realized there's people react so differently regarding the same situation. For example, in China, we say, oh, so-and-so is fat. We would all laugh, but this laugh is so friendly and charming, kind of, we would never like look down on someone who is a fat, because to us, it's actually cute. Because you're growing that size, you know? And I remember when I first came to this country, I just couldn't take my eyes off of those ladies who are so curved, you know? And seriously, in my English class, that some topic that our English teacher was asking us what we think about this volume, this obesity or something, and only me in the entire class with all international students, only me, I was saying, I love them because it looks like a cartoon figure, you know, to me. So anyway, and so I remember my grandfather came to this country, he also was so amazed at this shape. So in a way that, you know, how can I say that, but I have to learn in this country, you cannot say someone is fat. And with this black thumb, I mean, why couldn't the African American ladies like understand this joke or from your point of view instead of immediately think, oh, he's attacking me because of my color?
Oh, it's a huge collection of things in there, and I really appreciate everything you've said, including the heart that you brought to it, and how can I put it? I just think it's useful to come back to what it's like for you to be on the receiving end of communications that are really unwanted. And in other words, let's just come back to the experience. And I think it's easy for these topics to become really quite abstract and then they get charged. It's so helpful to bring it back down to earth, not theoretical. What's it like when someone's bossing you around and you don't want that? What's it like when someone is coming at you in an unwanted, sexualized way? What's it like when someone is being critical and you don't want to hear it? What's it like when someone's giving you advice, you're not interested? What's that actually feel like? What's it like when someone is saying something to you that's implicitly condescending, demeaning, or prejudiced? What's that like? It's real. Flip it around. What's it like for them? And then how do we navigate that? And I think that's very foundational, and it really helps to ground this topic. And the bottom line, shared element of both skillfulness and morality of the Buddha was about not harming. skillfulness and morality, not harming, not harming oneself, and not harming others. And in that, not letting others, as best one can, harm oneself or harm others. That's kind of the bottom line. And so that's, for me, very much the framework here. What do we do when something's coming at us that's unwanted and harmful? It's not just sort of surprising and funny and interesting and cute and cool. It's actually harmful. There's something in it that's not good for us. Flip around the other way, how can we become more aware ourselves of our impact on other people? Kind of the central matter. Yeah.
I ran a statewide hospital association in California back in the 80s, and I was one of three females in California doing that. And I had an all-male board. And over a weekend, I had to make an executive decision, and I was the president CEO of the organization. And I couldn't reach our chairman of the board. And I tried every which way. Anyways, we get to the meeting 5 days later, and no one's talking to me. He's sitting like this at a board meeting, and I'm there. And
that's a communication.
Right. And then the highest paid hospital administrator starts attacking me. Now, I had been raised, I think I shared once before, by an abusive father. And he used to swear four-letter words at me, or at his kids. And I got terrified before this meeting saying, this might happen to me. And then I realized, no, he would do it in a professional way. He wouldn't use four-letter words at me. And so I also thought, he'll probably interrupt me. I was listening to some tapes that brought that up, just like you had. And so they gave instructions on what to do if somebody did. So I felt very empowered. Anyway, this guy hammered away at me for about 45 minutes in front of the whole board. And normally I would have melted and died and cried, but because I was expecting it and I had to visualize the plastic bubble around myself, that all the negative stuff would bounce off of me. Anyway, it all worked. And finally someone said to him, I think you've said enough.
After 45 minutes?
Yes. And then I started to talk, and I got like two words out, and he immediately interrupted me. And from these tapes, I was able to say, because back then, a woman was only allowed to be nice. You couldn't show anger, you couldn't show anything but niceness. And is it still true?
Still true.
And so I said, excuse me, I believe I was talking, and I'd like to finish what I had to say. And it shut him down. I got maybe my 10 sentences out, which is all I wanted to say, and then, you know, he went on. After the meeting, two independent advisors came up to me, males, and told me, fantastic job. I was so...
All right.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Very hard publicly.
Yeah.
And if you don't expect... If I hadn't expected it, it would have been a totally different thing.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Other people, just really wanting to open it up. Yeah, you had your hand up, yeah.
I have a question. In my situation, I have this longing to have my close relationships a little bit more real. Yeah, just a little bit more real. And maybe a little bit more truthful, and a little bit more that people, that the parties, me and the other party or other parties, are a little bit more authentic.
You're wanting that.
I'm wanting it, and because I have probably a limited life span, I'm longing for it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be wasting my time.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'm always navigating that well. And I'm not, so my question is, where in right speech?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What can I take from this to help me, in a sense, get the kind of communications and relationships I want more of?
Yeah. So can you imagine making a request? In other words, saying what you want. Can you imagine saying what you want in a way that is well-intended, true, beneficial, not harsh, timely, and ideally wanted.
That's a long list.
I know, but it took less than 45 minutes. But that's the. I think that's the Buddha's take. I mean, I can't. I don't know. We don't have a relationship manual that's come down to us from 2,500 years, but we have these fundamental principles. And it's not like he said, "Don't tell people what you want." And there are many instances in which there are examples of people saying, in a somewhat formal language of the time, quite respectful, what they want or don't want, and him responding similarly. So if you imagine, for me, well, can we tell people what we want? Can we ask for what we want? And as a longtime couples counselor and longtime husband, I think people often err on the side of actually not saying clearly what they want. Because it's vulnerable often to say what you really want and to put it especially as a vulnerable request. That's kind of my phrase for it, a vulnerable request. Where your heart's on the line a little bit. Obviously, what's a vulnerable request in a business board meeting is a different setting than with a long-term friendship, let's say. But to make the vulnerable request, and very often I can say that I feel like I'm on the receiving end sometimes. I don't know what they want. If I knew what they wanted, I'd love to give it to them. But I don't know what they want exactly. Because they're using euphemisms or dancing around the bush or finding fault with what I'm doing wrong but not telling me what to do that's right. Or not turning, I call it operationalizing, it's a weird fancy word, but not taking this vague cloud of request, grievance, complaint, something coming at me and boiling it down to what would it actually look like if I gave you what you wanted here? Which is such a useful question, I think. So that to me, I think, is a kind of a Rick context for this. You know, I won't say it's the Buddha's, but and to look internally at the fears that come up about asking for what we really want, especially the hard things, things that are vulnerable or intimate, or in which maybe we feel wronged. That's part of the backstory, right? Or maybe it's about a topic that's a sketchy, touchy one in relationships, sexuality, among other topics. So I think being aware of our own inhibitions on expressing and what we want and asking for what we want, that's useful to be mindful of. Yeah. Great. Please.
We started out with sexual harassment. I don't really want to go there, but what I've become aware of is that we have grown up, you know, with such different parents, men and women, you know, that there is so thousands of years, that there are so many behaviors, and I'm not even talking about talking and communication, you know, just completely unconscious behaviors from the side of men that are totally offensive. I give you one very simple example, you know, forever. When I was traveling and I sat down in the train or on the bus, okay, then there comes a guy and he goes like this, you know.
Across from you?
No, right next to
okay.
me.
Okay.
Right next to me.
Oh.
I have to kind of squeeze, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I really,
you mean he's invading your space?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
he's crossing the line between
yes,
you.
And that is, there's so many things, you know. I mean, that is not really sexual harassment, right? But, you know, there's so many behaviors,
yeah,
like subtle things also that are so, you know, part of the cultural color, you know, and upbringing, that it takes a tremendous amount of rendering that awareness, you know, of developing that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I wanted to say. And, you know, men, just as they are with their upbringing, they're very offensive without really wanting to, you know.
Mm.
And what do I say? I never said anything when that happened, you know.
Yeah.
And I was boiling inside with
for
anger,
sure,
you know, for being invaded.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. And what I think about myself internally, and we'll wrap on this one, is what can we do ourselves, just like you were saying, with our own practice? And I think one thing is to flag that there's been some kind of, I'll call it a boundary crossing. Something has happened, call it that. And to know for yourself that it's true, that something happened. They did use that word. They did cross the line between two seats on a train. They did touch you, and they did touch you there, or whatever it was, to know for yourself what's true that happened. And I think another thing is to know for oneself, how can I put it, whether it was an offense or not, and to know that in a healthy way, and to not be, to have moral confidence, I think. I think there's obviously a transition from moral confidence to being righteous and universalizing our own standards to all cultures and all people. So I think that's a really important thing. But what I read when myself as a man, when I read these accounts lately, to come back to where we started, of women talking about this, often what they talk about is the initial sense of shock, did this really happen at all? And then second, am I really entitled to do something about this or speak up about this? And I think as part of our internal practice, again, grounded in Buddhism, is one, always the principle of clear seeing and the dispelling of ignorance, the dispelling of delusion. What is true? And taking our stand and refuge in what is true for ourselves. And then second, really zeroing in on that principle of harming or not. In other words, was it an offense? Was there a harm? Did something happen for true? Am I entitled to know, at least for myself? Maybe I can't say a word in this setting, in this moment, or it's all happening so fast I don't quite know what to say, but at least I can know for myself that I'm entitled to know for myself that something wrong happened here.
There's also always, I remember, you know, there's a fear.
A fear, yeah.
What if that person, if I say something to him, what if that person's like really aggressive asshole?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I can imagine another situation where I can, you know, where energetically I feel encouraged, you know, to address it because he seems a nice enough person who's just like unconscious.
Clueless or something, intent impact, Okay.
Fear is a big thing. And one last thing.
Oh, good.
The other day I said, I'm so glad that I'm old. That this is not a topic anymore for me. Because I've lived, you know, like every day there's always something, you know, fear.
Yeah. No, thank you for saying that. Yeah. I'm sorry that that's been true.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming back to again, what's it feel like for us to be on the receiving end of unwanted communications? What do we do then? And also, flip it around, thoughtfulness about what from us could be unwanted for others. How about we sit for a minute and finish up? Take good care. Hopefully see you next week.
Very stimulating.